Happy New Year from the California Cattlemen's Association, and welcome to Season 4 of Sorting Pen, the California Cattlemen Podcast. I'm your host, Katie Roberti, and CCA's Director of Communications. Whether you've been listening to this podcast for years, or this is the very first episode you've turned on, I'm excited to get to sort through the issues and events impacting California's ranching families and producers again with you this year. Tune in every other Monday for new episodes, and follow our brand new Facebook page, Sorting Pen, for more. Well, welcome back to another episode of Sorting Pen. Thanks for joining us. As we mentioned last episode, a bunch of the CCA staff was headed to Orlando for the National Cattlemen's Beef Association meetings and the Cattle Industry Trade Show. We have been here in Orlando and heard some great updates over the last couple days, had a lot of good time to meet with people across the country. And today we just wanted to give an update kind of from the NCBA staff in DC. So joining us today, we have someone very exciting, especially for those of you listening from Modoc County. We have one of California's own, and that is Rebecca Barnett. She's the Director of Animal Health and Food Safety Policy. She's going to join us and talk a little bit about kind of how she got to DC and what she's working on. So thanks for joining us, Rebecca.
Well, thank you for having me. It truly is an excitement to get to be in DC and represent cattle producers. It reminds me of a little patch of home while in DC. So very excited about that. And just kind of the path that led me there. So I've always just kind of had that cross between animal health in my background. But while I was in California, I got to intern at the California State Assembly. Then even in grad school, kind of continued on that policy space, but did an internship in DC and then thought my roots might go back to California, but had a wonderful opportunity at the National Association of State Departments at Ag open up. And so did that for a few years. And then when NCBA had a position, I was more than honored to get to represent back home even further.
It's nice to have someone from California in the DC office. They have a great staff. We had Ethan Lane at our convention in December, and Ethan's always great to catch up with and hear what he's doing. He's always very positive. It's great to know that you're there as well. And then also Kelsey from California is in the DC office as well, I just learned.
Exactly. So she joined around the same time that I did. She's from Northern California, the Chico area, and then being from Aden, California, a little further north, but it's nice to have two people that are kind of from the same area. And one thing I did forget to mention, kind of on the path to getting there in D.C., when I remember Intermountain Cattlemen sponsored me to go to D.C. when I was in high school and didn't realize that put a little bug in me. So it's full circle to get to be at National Cattlemen's after that experience. And I continue throughout kind of undergrad and even grad school reflected on that experience. And so, again, it's just an honor to kind of see that full circle.
Yeah, I'm sure they appreciate seeing that too. You never really know how those internships are going to take you. We were talking yesterday, I actually did the public land sponsorship to go to their Ledge conference too. And that was definitely something that I look back on now. And it did put a little bug in me as well. So cool for those groups to get to see their funds come kind of full circle as well. Mm-hmm. So you had a very busy day yesterday. This, as you mentioned, you started almost a year ago, so this is your first cattle con. Your job title is, as I mentioned, Director of Animal Health and Food Safety Policy, which is quite a lot. So let's hear a little bit about the priorities you're working on, and then we can talk a little bit about yesterday.
So one of the big priorities right now would be fake meat. So that kind of has the plant side of things, and then there's that new emerging space in the cell cultured space. And so it's been exciting to get to work on that. From the standpoint, we're not afraid to compete, but we want to make sure that those labels are accurate and transparent and not deceiving to consumers. Just think about all the hard work that producers back home do to have a safe, high-quality product, and then have these companies want to come in and ride over those coattails. So that's something we don't want to happen. And so working hard with Congress to make sure that we can have legislation that was put forward. So we just had the Fair Labels Act introduced this week that touches that piece of transparency and labeling. Also, on the regulatory side, we are working with USDA to ensure that they are held to the same food safety inspection standards. And so that's really important to us because, again, we don't want them to ride in. And if there's a recall on those products, we want to make sure consumers know that was from a laboratory and not your conventionally raised beef.
That sounds like it could be a full-time job on its own.
Exactly.
How has your past education and your experiences kind of prepared you to work on that issue? What did you study in grad school?
So in grad school, I did a master's in agribusiness, but through the elective classes, I got to take a HACCP class. So that was kind of helpful. I kind of always had that dabble in animal science, so I was very thankful that that was my elective. And we developed a plan in that course that you looked at what food safety looked like and the different pathogens and those measures. And so now that's applicable to kind of thinking about how these products might be manufactured. But one of the things is there's a lot of unknowns still in that space and what that looks like. That's another reason why last week there was a School Integrity Act. So that was to ban right now at this time any cell-cultured products for the school lunch program or breakfast program, just because we feel like, and we're not also able to get our hands on one of those products, and we can't get it through customs and borders. Right now, the only one that I'm aware of is Israel-approved beef. I know there's chicken in the United States that's approved for cell-cultured, but so we can't even get our hands on that to kind of do the scientific review of it, of as far as what does that look like within it. I mean, it's still tissue, so you may have to use antibiotics. So what does that look like? So we introduced that thinking children probably should not be the guinea pigs for having these products in their lunches.
Yeah, especially if you can't even get your hands on it. That's kind of scary to not know what's going into the school. So that just got introduced last week?
Correct. That was introduced last week. We had Senator Tester in rounds. And so now we're kind of looking at the House side of things to see if we can get a bill introduced on that side.
We'll definitely be sure to link in the podcast the information about that. So if you're listening, you want to know more, you can go click on that and read NCBA's press release on it. The other big issue I know that you're working on, and we talked a lot about last year when we were in New Orleans, and I think it's kind of been the ongoing conversation for like a decade now, is traceability. I did mention this is your first CattleCon, and I think you probably had the most packed committee meeting room yesterday talking about traceability in cattle health. So let's talk a little bit about that and what you're working on there.
So we're really, this is a great opportunity to kind of see how our grassroots policy works through, especially on traceability. A lot of conversation has gone on around that. And so we're seeing how that plays out. It passed through committee, but now it still has to go to our board of director, and really kind of slowly moving the inches on that. What's important, and especially when I think of back home, the economic drivers there are cow-calf, hay, and timber. And so when I think of if we had a foreign animal disease such as foot and mouth disease, the devastating impact that that would have. I would hope I would still have a place to call home to go home to because of how devastating it's going to be. There is an economic analysis that USDA put out with their Red Book in response to a foreign animal disease. And if we got foot and mouth disease, the economic impact is over $228 billion. And that's before COVID and before inflation dollars. And the reason disease traceability is so important and why it's more of an, I think, an individual producer, you don't treat foot and mouth disease because we haven't had it since 1929. However, it's an industry issue because immediately all trade stops, and then APHIS will also have the authority to stop all interstate movement or all movement altogether. So there'll be a 72-hour standstill of all cattle. So if you think of the disruption that COVID had on our supply chain, this is just 10 times worse. And so the quicker that we're able to kind of detect where those diseases are, the quicker we can get back to business and the lower that impact will be.
We did talk about it last year as well, but just coming out of COVID, it's a little bit easier to understand how much that would impact. We saw the supply chain get super backed up just from COVID. And then we're also seeing how this is impacting chicken producers right now with the avian influenza, unfortunately, in Sonoma County and around the country. Definitely don't want that to happen.
Yeah, I mean, you are seeing that. And I think even with foot and mouth disease, it just doesn't impact. I mean, right now with high path AI, that's one industry. But foot and mouth disease would be your cattle industry, sheep industry, swine industry, and even wildlife would be impacted, which the concern with wildlife is once it's in wildlife, how do you manage that? And that's what we're having a challenge with high path right now, is it's in the wild birds. And so you can do as much biosecurity as you want on your individual property, but once it's in the wild birds, it's harder to contain.
Yeah, that's definitely a scary thing. So yesterday, your meeting did go well. You mentioned that the resolution still has to go to the board of directors, but assuming that that does get approved tonight by the board of directors, what does this mean for NCBA staff? Is it a directive for you? Does it help you work on policy to move this forward? What kind of comes out of that meeting?
So if it passes through the board of directors, what this policy kind of sets is kind of continue on of what we're doing. We have a traceability working group that came together in the spring of 2022. And so one piece of it is just education, continuing to kind of educate on what does this look like? Is if we get a foot and mouth disease outbreak and traceability, how is that a key resource that we can utilize? And NCBA too, taking this on, knowing sometimes it might not be a matter of if, it's when. And so making sure industry is prepared for that and that we're in the driver's seat to be able to have it be something that works across all sectors. And so that's kind of a piece of this, is the education piece, working across the stakeholders, whether that's extension, whether that's going to be the different state level animal health officials in USDA, but just across the board, how do we come together and make something that's workable for industry? Another piece in there was a database. Again, that's industry driven, and industry coming together on data that might work for them, and maintaining that data confidentiality of producers is very important to us.
I know you've probably heard it a lot just in grumblings in the hall, or not even grumblings, just conversations, but probably from producers you know as well, that are worried about traceability and what that looks for them as a cow-calf producer or as a rancher, what added cost that's going to be, or extra time. If you were talking to some producers back home or just some of your family friends and they were asking you, what does this look like for me as a cow-calf producer, what would you tell them?
So the current rule that, and I would want people to be aware that USDA, they have put out a proposed rule, which they're thinking they're going to finalize it this year, which means that the current metal ear tags, those would go to electronic, but it's not changing anything as far as what classifications of cattle. So it's going to maintain what we're existing. However, it's just moving it to electronic. And why that's important is not to track anyone's cattle. It's really about, in the time of an emergency, we have something that is quick and rapid. The example I often use, which is a little wonky, but I often think of, if you were in an emergency situation, you got in a car accident, or you had, unfortunately, something awful that happened, you're not going to go look something up in the encyclopedia. You're not going to write a letter to somebody. You're going to pick up your phone, or you're going to find some quick means of getting the information you need so you can quickly get through it. And so that's kind of what I think of when you think of electronic identification.
Yeah, right now when I think of it, and I think for those who have listened to the podcast before, you might remember this as well, but Tom Talbot is on the Traceability Task Force with NCBA. Tom's a past president of CCA, a veterinarian, and Tom has talked about, if you've ever been in a corral working cows, you know how much crap is flying around. Yes. Literally. So thinking about having all these papers coming from corrals to some like room in DC or wherever they're going, and having file cabinets of everything.
So that's actually a really good question. So if you talk to a lot of the state veterinarians and folks that you move your cattle across state lines, you know that you had to have that health certificate. What goes with that health certificate? So it goes to, depending on the state you're in, but in California, the state vets in the State Department of Ag, that health paper, if it's not electronic, it goes into boxes. And so if you had a disease outbreak like foot and mouth disease, which that is highly contagious, it could spread in the air over 6 miles if the climate is right, that'd be thousands of animals at once that you're trying to go through pieces of paper that might have crap on them, whatever it may be. I know that's direct, but it may have snot on there, and you're trying to transcribe that penmanship. And so that could take, I've talked to other state animal health officials across the country. They said it could take up to 6 months to trace things. And that is 6 months of not moving. And that's just elongating that economic impact. So if you can quickly do it, then you're mitigating all that supply chain disruption and all the economic impact that that could have. I think it's also important for producers to know, just to be prepared, is if you have the mechanisms in place, such as a secure beef supply or some of those biosecurity measures, that also means you can move your cattle in the event of a foreign animal disease outbreak if you're not in kind of a control zone or you're not one of those infected facilities. And I just think that's really important for people to know, so that way if this does happen, they would still want to move their cattle and get back to business.
No one wants to be shut down for any amount of time, but as little as possible would be great if this happens to happen. That's a great update there. I'm sure that's helpful for producers to hear. I'm sure you're working on a couple other issues. Maybe we can talk about those real quick. You could just tell us a little bit, or just in general, what the DC staff is working on. I was just talking with Hunter from the DC office and asking him a little bit about, what does an election year look like in DC? Are you guys around members a lot? Are there lots of fundraisers? So I know it's kind of an interesting year in DC with the presidential election, but what else are you working on, and what's the office up to the next couple months?
I think some of the big things that we're looking into, obviously, is appropriations, trying to move that forward, because once that's kind of out of the way, hopefully we can start the conversations on the farm bill. So that's every 5 years. This was a 2023 2023 farm bill, but now it's 2024. But we're hopeful that we can get that through this year. And why that's so important is, again, through my job with animal health, there's different priorities that we have within that. And so there's kind of, we like to call it three-legged stool, but it's, again, kind of goes back to that animal disease with response, eradication, and just different programs. And another big piece of that is we've worked really hard in the last farm bill to secure a foot and mouth disease vaccination bank. And so that's within that and getting funding for that. So I think really get appropriations through. Then you have the farm bill, hopefully. A lot of conversation to try to get that this year. And then when you go into fall, that's when you're going to see a lot of members go back to their states for campaign, and then you kind of have this lame duck period. But still, the conversations and our job's important to go onto the Hill and continue to educate, especially for the following, the next Congress. I've noticed kind of plant the seed and really put the boots on the ground and walk those halls and have those conversations and educate folks. It just makes your job easier when the timing is right to push something forward. And one thing I really realized through my job is, especially being in DC, is growing up where I grew up, everybody knows where their food comes from. Everybody is friendly to ag. And then when I went to DC, I finally realized that is not true. So it is important to continue to educate and have that message. And even in times when Congress might be going through a lot and it seems like you're not gaining a lot of ground, that education piece is so important.
I'm really glad that you mentioned that. It's really just nice to hear that you're there and having those conversations, even when it does seem like all the news is saying is how wild it is in DC or what's really happening there. It's hard to know when you're not there, but it's great to hear that from you. I know our leadership really wants to get a trip to DC together in this short time or in the next couple months or even the next year. So hopefully we can connect with you there, and it will be great to have our own California tour guide.
Yes, I'd appreciate that. Anytime I get to have folks from back home and get to interact with any cattle producers that come to town, that's kind of what recharges me to keep on going.
Absolutely. Well, if you're listening, this is also a great segue to mention our legislative breakfast in Sacramento is coming up, and it's very similar. A lot of these members, a lot of them are new, they're freshmen, they don't really know anything about the beef industry in California. So definitely make sure that you're going to take the time to attend that. In March, you can go to calcattleman.org/events and get all the details. But Rebecca, I'm really excited to meet you and I want to thank you for making time for this. It was really fun to have you on and important to hear about the good things that you're working on. Probably look forward to chatting with you again soon.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure. And I just continue to look forward to represent California, represent back home, and hopefully get to continue to interact with folks. If they ever come to Washington, D.C., love to hear from them, love to take them out to dinner and just continue to help them do whatever is needed to keep them in business back home.
I think you'll definitely have some people hitting you up on that. I'll mention as well, NCBA's Legislative Boots on the Hill Conference is happening again this year in April. So I'll link that in the podcast description as well. And you can be sure to connect with Rebecca there as well.
Well, thank you.
Thank you. Enjoy the rest of your time in Orlando. Thanks for listening, and we'll be back in 2 weeks with another episode from Orlando.